The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Shofar, so good, right? What is the shofar? What is Rosh Hashanah? What are we trying to accomplish? I have to tell you, not so long ago, where I live in Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, just outside my window is a synagogue. So they say that one of the ideas of the shofar is that it's to call us to awaken. And that's exactly, but literally what happened not so long ago. I was sleeping, and I hear a shofar blowing. And I had forgotten that it's Rosh Chodesh Elul. So it was a total surprise to me. And all of a sudden, I was overcome in my bed with this kind of cold sweat. Broke out, this cold sweat, like, ugh, it's Elul. It's that time of introspection. It's that time of taking inventory. It's that time. And I felt a little trembling over there. I want to tell you honestly that I have mixed feelings about this season. Mixed feelings, especially about Rosh Hashanah. There's a side of me that honestly doesn't like it. Don't like it. I mean, who likes to be judged? Anybody like to be judged? Does anybody like to feel small? Does anyone like to feel like, uh-oh, pay up time? Like, it's scary. It's really scary. This is a time of fear. Now, I know fear is a four-letter word. And people are not comfortable with the idea of fear. It's all about love, and nobody wants to talk about fear. So I want to talk a little bit about loving fear. Right? Because there's something that we really fear about these days, and fear about Rosh Hashanah, and standing there in judgment, and the whole imagery of Judaism, of this king who's sitting on the throne of judgment, and is looking at every one of my deeds. All is being calculated. Nothing is forgotten. A little neurotic, you know what I mean? A little neurotic these days. On the other hand, I really love these days. There's something about it that's actually very empowering. There's something about it that's really overwhelming and makes you feel small. And when you're my size, you can't afford to feel smaller. No? But on the other hand, there's something so empowering about it. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about it. I remember I once did something that apparently upset my mother. I don't remember what I did, but it was bad. It was bad. And my mother punished me. I was so angry at my mother, I decided I'd get back at her. So what I did is I went into her closet and her drawers, and I took out all her stockings, and I tied them all into little knots, all connected to each other. Right? And again, I must have been about 20 years old. No, I was 25. So, anyways, I don't know, I must have been 6 or 7 years old. And I was feeling so good. I had tied all these stockings into knots, and I really got back at my mother. And then I heard my mother coming into the house. And I went, whoa. So what did I do? I hid them in the china cabinet. And the next day, my mother's looking for a clean pair of stockings, and she can't find her stockings. She doesn't understand, not one stocking. So she says, do you know where my stockings are? No. Right? Okay, well, so she doesn't know what to do. Later on that day, she's getting something from the china cabinet, and there are her stockings. All interconnected. And I remember my mother coming towards me with this, I considered it art, but she didn't consider it art, you know, kind of a whatever, macrame. And she comes up to me and she said, "Do you know what this is all about?" "No." And now I'm shaking. "Do you know, what is this?" "I don't know." "Well, anyways, I got it." What? I got punished for that one. Now imagine another scenario. Imagine my mother comes in and she finds her stockings all in knots. And she says, "Hey, look at this. Isn't this nice? Isn't this interesting? How did this happen? Did you do that?" "Oh, yes, I did." "Ah, it's okay." "It is?" "Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'll get more socks." "You will?" "Yeah, what's the difference?" "Ah, my cry over knotted stockings." What would I prefer? Would I prefer to see that what I did really made a difference to my mother? So much so that it evoked a response and I needed to bear a consequence to my behavior? Or would I prefer to feel that my mother doesn't really quite care what I do? What do you really prefer? We prefer judgment. You have to understand that when you love somebody, you judge them. And you have to understand that the people you love the most are the people you judge the most because you care. And the people that you love the most are the people you're probably going to fight the most with, because what they say and what they do really matters. I don't judge my mailman. I don't even know who he is. I can't even tell you what he looks like. Right? And so today I got my mail a little bit wrinkled. Hey, big deal, he's a mailman. I mean, you don't. The closer you are to someone, the more you care about them, the more you judge them. Now, I want you to understand an amazing idea in Judaism. There's a verse in the Torah where Hashem is speaking to Abraham and says, "I'm going to give you the covenant and I will be unto you an Elohim." In Jewish tradition, to encounter Hashem as an Elohim is a beautiful gift. But in Jewish tradition, the word Elohim is specifically associated with God in terms of judgment. And yet, that's what we're aspiring towards. Judgment. It's an amazing idea. On one hand, we don't like judgment. On the other hand, think about it. We love judgment. We need judgment. Because judgment means what I do makes a difference. And there are consequences to my behavior. Now, it's so interesting. We actually love punishment. Ah, come on. We love punishment? Well, I can see it in my children. Sometimes my kids do these really naughty things. I mean, I did naughty things too. I tied my mother's socks into knots. But they do naughty things. And I say to them, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this? I'm asking you not to do this." And they have this little, you know, smile. And they keep doing it. I say, "Well, what do you want from me? You want me to punish you, right? You want me to put you in your room, you know, for an hour?" And they have a little smile, keep doing it. Sometimes children want to be punished. Now, of course, they don't want to be abused. Let's not confuse abuse with punishment, okay? But they want to see that what they did made a difference. And that it really matters to you. Because they're testing their boundaries. If there's things that I can't do, then I know where I'm at. But if everything's okay and it really doesn't matter, then I don't matter. And I don't make a difference. I would say that's probably one of the greatest challenges of people today, is they don't feel they make a difference. And they don't feel that what they do matters. And that's just the opposite in Jewish tradition. Jewish tradition has deeply, deeply instilled within our hearts the understanding that what you do matters. Okay, maybe it's gone a little overboard for some people and it's turned into some unproductive guilt and neurosis. But imagine the flip side It's just feeling like it doesn't make a difference. You're lost in space. You're lost in space. It doesn't really matter. This is quite remarkable. And when you love somebody, then every detail matters. And you know that. There used to be a game called The Newlyweds. Is it still around? It's a funny game. One of these TV games. There'd be these like three contestants, three couples, they're newlyweds. And what would happen is the husbands, let's say, would be left on stage and the wives would leave. And they would ask the husbands questions like, okay, boys, tell us, what is your wife's favorite toothpaste? And they write it down. My guy writes Colgate. Another one writes Ultra Bright. I don't know if that still exists, right? And another one writes Crest. Okay, women, come on in. All right, so they sit down. Okay, we've asked your husband some real personal questions about your relationships and a little couple details to see if there's, you know. Okay. So we asked your husbands, what's your favorite toothpaste? Right? And they have to write that down, right? So this one woman writes down Crest. Right? Oh, Joe, could you show her what you wrote? Ooh. Colgate? How you wrote Colgate? Yeah, I mean, I'm a Crest woman. I mean, we talked about this. I can't believe this. And it's just the funniest game because it's a prelude to the game tomorrow, which is called the Newly Divorced Game. Right. And it's so interesting. Why? Well, listen, sweetheart, Colgate, Crest, Ultra Bright, I love your teeth. I don't care what you brush with, you know. Come on, sweetie. It's not true. Love is in the details. Because it means I matter. And it means what I do matters to you. And what you do matters to me, all the way down to the details. You know, people, they're annoyed by the details of Judaism, like the spirit of the law, but not the details. Love is in the details. And yes, on Rosh Hashanah, I am being judged for details. Because that judgment is telling me those details matter to me, because you matter to me. And everything you do, down to the smallest of smallest, really makes a difference. This is a tremendous challenge for parents. You know, I've had the pleasure to be, hopefully, an educator for about 20 years now. And I meet so many people, and it's just a delight. But some people, you see, were never judged in their life, never disciplined. And they really can't make choices. They can't find the borders in their lives. Because nobody ever showed them any borders. No one ever told them, you trespassed. You were out of line. I want you to know the word for justice is mishpat. Do you know what mishpat literally means? It means line. It means sentence. And just like when a person goes to court and they're sentenced to jail. Isn't that interesting? We sentence you to jail. What am I, a word? Yeah, you are a word. Because the true meaning of who we are is connected to being part of a sentence, a paragraph, a chapter. And that when you're out of line and you're behaving in a way which is not in concert with your true definition, then you're out of line. And we need to put you back into the sentence. It's about being sentenced. Mishpat is a sentence. And I'm not in line. That's a gift. We don't like to be judged, but we also love to be judged. We don't like to be punished, but sure, we would like to know where the buck stops. So I can know where I'm at, who I am, what are my borders, how far can I go, what's too much. So it's really hard because I see some parents, they just don't judge their children. There's some people I know in the old city, some friends. They are the sweetest, sweetest people. And their kids are so out to lunch. I can't believe these kids are doing the horrible things. And I know these people, they're such good people. They're too good. They don't judge their children. They don't tell the kids no. I love my kids so much I can't say no. If you loved your kid, you'd say no. You'd say no. I remember one of my students, she shared with me that her son unfortunately was deeply addicted. And he had to be put into a rehabilitation center. One day she gets a call. Let's call her Mrs. Smith for now. Mrs. Smith, your son has escaped from our center. We're pretty sure that he's on his way home. Please, Mrs. Smith, you can't let him in. You can't let him in. There's a knock at the door just at that moment. Who is it? Mom, it's Joey. It's Joey, Mom. Oh, Joey? Yeah, Mom, I got a little time off because I've been doing really good. And they said I could have like a few days. Could you imagine the challenge of that? His mother said, Joey, I know what's going on. They called me and I can't let you in. What are you talking about, Mom? I'm your son. I just want to give you a hug, Mom. I just want to give you a kiss, Mom. Joey, I can't let you in. What? How could you do this to me, Mom? I mean, hey, Mom, you don't understand what I'm going through, Mom. You can't. Well, I'm on you. Do you love me, Mom? You don't love me. You don't love me. And as he's screaming this, this car pulls up, and they start pulling this guy into the car. And he's screaming, you don't love me. She loves him. But sometimes love is judgment. Sometimes love is no. If you really love somebody. Sometimes love means you hurt me. And you can't do that. And I've had too many people come up to me and say, listen, I'm dating this man or I'm dating this woman, but unfortunately it's more I'm dating this man, or we've been living together, or we've been dating. And he really loves me. He really loves me. You know, it's just when he punches me that I punches you. Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, but, you know. Well, wait a second. He punches you? Well, right, yeah, once he gave me a black eye, but I really deserved it. You see, that's not okay. That's not judgment on his part. That's abuse. And that's not love on her part. That's fear. Fear of letting go and realizing this is not love. So, you know, it's sad. People are so scared of Rosh Hashanah. I'd be afraid of a life without a Rosh Hashanah. I so much need a day of judgment. I so much need a day of judgment. I need a month to take inventory. I need to get a little neurotic sometimes. I need to look at the details of my life and say, hey, am I out of line? I don't want to be out of line. I want to feel like what I do doesn't really make a difference on a higher level. I don't want to feel that my actions don't incur consequences. That's really essentially what punishment really means. And therefore, it's a balancing act. Some parents, they don't punish their children. And it says in Mishlei, in Proverbs, a parent that doesn't punish their child hates their child. Now again, what is punishment? There's a piece that says that we would hit our children with shoelaces. It wasn't, you know, some leather strap, but some form of punishment. And if you have a deep, deep relationship with your child, just a stern look will cause them to cry. That's enough of a punishment. Just a stern look. They can't bear it. My father. But then again, I've met people who clearly have been too judged, too criticized, damaged because they're never, never good enough. And there's no forgiveness. So that's Yom Kippur. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Right? We'll talk about forgiveness tomorrow. But today I want to talk about judgment. So there's a verse that says, Gilu Berada, you should rejoice in your trembling. And our sages associate this verse with Rosh Hashanah. You should rejoice in your trembling. Love your fears. Interesting. Yes, you should be afraid that you overstepped your boundaries. Yes, you should understand. I remember a fellow came up to a rabbi that taught me and said, you know, Rabbi, I believe in God. But you know why I believe in God? Because one day I was on my motorcycle and I was on this kind of like rocky road and I hit a rock and I went off the cliff. And I know this sounds absolutely crazy, Rabbi, but I literally experienced two hands catching me and slowly bringing me down to the ground. And I came out of this incredible motorcycle accident without a scratch. So I know that there's a God. And I know God loves me because God saved me. And the rabbi turned to him and said, well, I'm happy you know who saved you, but did you ever think who threw you off? Who threw you off in the first place? I know, no. Judgment means that somebody cares and you really make a difference. There's an interesting verse in Tehillim that says, Lecha Hashem HaChesed, to you Hashem is kindness, ki ata mishalem adam lefi ma'asa, because you pay a person according to their deeds. You give them what they deserve. Very odd verse. Makes no sense. That's kindness. Kindness is, I pay you according to your deeds. That's not kindness. What is kindness? Kindness is when I do something for you I don't have to do. Right? One day, you wake up, go outside, and your car is washed. And there I am, standing there, with a bucket and a shmata. You know what a shmata is, right? And, what are you doing? I washed your car. Why? Just felt like it, just wanted to. Right? That's kindness. Kindness is when you do something for somebody you don't have to do. Okay? It's kindness. What is judgment? Judgment is when you do something that you have to do. That's judgment. In other words, let's say I'm pulling into a tight spot in the parking lot and I scratch your car. Okay. So I write a little note and put it on your windshield and said, listen, I scratched your car and I've decided to do you a favor and I'm going to pay for the damages. Does that make sense? You're not doing me a favor. You owe it to me. Pay up. You made a mistake. You damaged my car. Take responsibility. I deserve to be paid. That's judgment. Right? But if you come up to the person, listen, I'm going to be nice and I'm going to pay you for the damage. That's going to be nice. That's judgment. I got to pay you. So that's judgment. Judgment is when I give you what you deserve. Kindness is when I give you something even though it has nothing to do with whether you deserve or not. What's compassion? Compassion is when I give you something even though you don't deserve. You get it? How's that different from kindness? Kindness is I do something nice to you. Compassion is I have every reason not to do something nice to you. In fact, you deserve that I do something very unnice to you. But I'm going to have compassion and do something nice to you. Do you get that? Okay? So kindness is being nice, doing good for the sake of doing the good. Justice is doing the good because you deserve the good. And compassion is in spite of the fact that you don't deserve the good, I am going to give you that good. Okay. So now I want to understand this verse. It says, to you Hashem, God, you are kind because you pay a person according to their deeds. You give them what they deserve. Tell me, what's the kindness in that? That's justice. So what's the kindness in that? You have to understand what's the greatest kindness. What is the greatest gift anybody could ever give you? And the greatest gift you could ever give somebody, it's a sense of self. Without a sense of self, can't even wake up. Can't even wake up. It's just the simple meaning of Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. I know people that I'd prefer them not to love me as themselves. I have a friend who's Nebuchadnezzar, he's paralyzed. People have to feed him. he told me he always have to remind people to give him the vegetables, the cooked vegetables. And even after he says, could I have the cooked vegetables? They give him one spoonful and they keep going to everything else. Because they automatically give him what they like. They don't like the cooked vegetables. They assume he doesn't like the cooked vegetables. Even after he tells them, I like the cooked vegetables, they don't hear it. Love your neighbor as yourself means that just as you would like to be treated in a unique way, you need to be treated. Treat other people in a unique way. They need to be treated. But what if you don't feel you deserve anything? What if you think you are just so worthless? And that's what you feel about yourself. Then how are you going to love others like you love yourself? Don't love others like you love yourself. That would be bad. The whole foundation of ourself, our actions, our lives, is the sense of the ani, the I. And the greatest gift parents could give their children, friends could give each other, husbands and wives could give each other, is a sense of self. And how do we do that? By telling you, you make a difference. Sometimes I give you something you don't deserve. Sometimes I give you something that, even though you don't deserve it, I'm going to do it anyways. But sometimes the greatest kindness is justice. To give you what you deserve, to understand the meaning of your behavior, so that you can own your behavior, take responsibility for your choices, and come to a deep understanding that you make a difference to me. You know, people get a little disturbed by these visions of God being angry. You know, there are these images and scriptures about God being angry. Don't you understand? Who do you get the most angry with? The people you love the most. Because you can't believe they did that. It so hurts you so deeply that they're hurting themselves and others by behaving that way. And you get so angry. Not that we actually believe that God gets angry. But these are terms that we use to try and evoke a certain religious experience, a religious feeling about our relationship, so that we can understand that this behavior is so serious that it would warrant, if God were like a human being, to anger, God would be angry. But not as if God is angry, literally. We don't talk about God in that way, literally, but poetically. So we have to understand this is the greatest gift. In tzedakah, there are certain levels of charity. What's the highest form of charity? The lowest form is to give somebody money. That's actually the lowest form of charity. A higher form of charity is to give them the money as a loan so they can pay you back. But what if they can't pay you back and you know they're not going to be able to pay you back? Well, then what the better thing would be is to give them charity in a hidden way. They don't know where it came from. I remember one day in my mailbox was a check for $25,000. No. And it was written in a way that I could not track where this came from. It was for Israel, it wasn't for me, but that's true tzedakah. You know, you're not looking for your name out there. Now, there's some reason, sometimes there's a very important reason why you should have your name out there, because you have a responsibility to teach your children, or sometimes you should put your name out there because you have the responsibility to inspire others to do it. But not that you need your name on the building. But your tzedakah at that point would be to use your name to inspire others. So you have to be understanding the limitations of this or the parameters of this, but to give charity in a concealed way. And then higher than that, the highest form of tzedakah is to give somebody a job. That's the highest form of charity. Now why? What is determining this graduation of tzedakah? It's the extent that it preserves a person's sense of self. If I just give the person money, then I give them money, but I take them their self. They lose a little self-respect. They lose a little feeling of I can. They lose a little feeling of their own personal empowerment. So if I could give it in a way that's concealed, at least they don't feel embarrassed in front of me, so I save their face a little bit. But even better, if I could give them a loan and they could pay me back, that would save their face even more. And even better, if I could just give them a job. That would give them the money, and more important, that would give them the sense of self. This is judgment. God is kind because the greatest gift you could give a person is a sense of self. And the greatest way of giving a person a sense of self is to judge them and help them understand that what they did made a difference. This is good, this is bad, this is creative, this is destructive. And you did that. And take ownership of your behavior. And then you take ownership of yourself. So Rosh Hashanah is a time to really be happy. Rejoice in your trembling. Recognize the incredible kindness that you're being judged. And it really makes a difference what you're going to do. And this, by the way, is all reflected in the blowing of the shofar. What's so good about that shofar? What's the shofar doing? It actually suggests this interesting dance or dialectic of experience, of feelings on the day. The trembling and the rejoicing. The shofar has a number of messages, and I'm only going to touch on a few. One message is, on Rosh Hashanah, I am acknowledging God is King. Right? I am acknowledging God is King. And therefore, I blow the shofar. And the old days, the good old days, when people, or when a king is about to come, they would blast trumpets, a certain royal entree for the king. So we start off the shofar blowing with what's called a tekiah, right? And a tekiah is a long blow. And a tekiah literally means, litkoa means to establish, to drive a stake into the ground. We're being litkoa, right? So there's something very establishing, empowering about the tekiah. So the tekiah goes like this. Now what happens when I feel the king coming? This is what I feel like. Which is called truen shvarim, which means crying and breaking down. King's coming. I'm trembling. I'm scared. Here comes the judge. What's going on? And something shatters. But then, from the brokenness, comes this tekiah. Another empowering, driving sound. What does this mean? I would suggest the first tekiah means that we announce the coming of the king. The broken, the shvarim, and the crying, and the trua, is the overwhelming realization that I'm being judged, and I'm scared, and I break down. But through the breakdown, I actually come out strong with a tekiah. What is strong? What really breaks down? When I blast the shvarim, it's my ego shattering. And when I blast the final tekiah, it's my soul emerging. What's the difference between ego and soul? What really needs to be broken on Rosh Hashanah? Who's trembling in me and who's rejoicing? It's my ego that's trembling and it's my soul that's rejoicing. Why is my ego trembling? What is ego? When I was in high school, the epitome of an egomaniac was a rock star who not only wrote the music, played all the instruments, produced it, did all the sound engineering, as well as designed the cover, drew the cover, and his name is everywhere. He can't work with anybody because he is self-defined, self-sufficient, independent. That's ego. And that's a lie. Nobody is self-sufficient. Nobody is independent. Nobody is self-defined. But that's ego talk. That's ego. I don't need anybody. why do I shatter when I have my ego? Because my ego wants to believe that I can do anything where I want, when I want, how I want, and I don't have to account to anybody. And I'm not liable to anybody. And I don't stand in relationship to a reality greater than myself. That's ego. And therefore, when I hear that tekiah, the king comes, my ego shatters. I realize I'm not self-sufficient, I'm not self-defined, I'm not independent. I am accountable, I am reliable, I am responsible. What does responsibility mean? It means the ability to respond. There's someone I need to respond to. And I'm able to respond. But ego people don't hear anybody. They just hear themselves and only care about themselves. And when they find out that there's a reality greater than themselves, they're shattered. That's ego shatters. The ego is trembling. The ego is shattering. The soul is empowered. Because the soul knows. The true you, the inner you knows that to be accountable means that you count. And you don't count if you're not accountable. And that's empowering to know that. That what you did makes a difference. And what you did incurs consequences. And what you did, God actually cares about what you did. So it's the ego that is trembling. It is the soul that is rejoicing. It is the ego that is shattering. And from the shattered ego emerges this shining, empowered soul. Rosh Hashanah is actually our birthday. Did you know that? One of the reasons why Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Hashanah is because our tradition tells us that Adam was created on that day. Did you know that? And so Rosh Hashanah is actually celebrating the birthday of mankind. Now, what do you think? Isn't that a way to celebrate a birthday? You know, sitting in synagogue most of the day, trembling, being judged, listening to the shofar blowing. Is that a birthday? Is a birthday a day of judgment? Well, when we're children, now, we love birthdays. When we're children, we even lie about our age, that we're older than we look. Right? Or we push it. I'm really 5 and a half. Right? We're pushing it, right? But there's a certain age that you get to that you're not so interested in saying, you know, you're X and a half. I remember asking, I met this woman, and I asked her, I said, so you're about like 30? She said, also. Good lie. I'm also 30. She was 40. Well, 30's within the 40, right? The older we get, the more birthdays become days of judgment. Because what really happens on a birthday? I wake up that morning and I say to myself, okay, Dave, so you were born. Yeah. 44 years ago. Uh-huh. Yeah, so what have you done? So what have you done? There's a piece in the Yom Kippur prayer that when I read that, I tell you, it just pierces my soul. It's in the Viduim, in the Confessions. We say, before I was born, Eini Kedai. I wasn't worthwhile. Because if I were worthwhile, this is the commentary, then I'd be born. If I was needed in this world, then I would be born. And now that I'm born, it's as if I wasn't born. Am I Kedai? Was my life worthwhile? And it says, and I stand before you as a vessel filled with embarrassment. Because I should be a vessel. I should be a vehicle for bringing so much light and happiness in the world for people. Did I do anything? Did I make the difference I could have made? So as those birthdays come, they become more and more a day of judgment. Rosh Hashanah is the grand birthday of mankind, and the Jewish people understand that birthdays are a day of judgment. And ask yourself, Kedai or lo kedai? was and am I worthwhile? Is there purpose and meaning to my existence? Am I making a difference? Now I want you to understand what a difference means. It doesn't necessarily mean you save the world. I had a student, she said something which so inspired me. It was at the end of Israelite, and she said at the end of the program that her father was walking on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea, and he saw an Arab fellow, an old man, and he was there, and as far as the eyes could see, up and down the coast, were these starfish that were washed up from the sea and dying on the coast. But you're talking thousands and thousands and thousands, all the way as far as the eyes could see up and down the coast. And here is this Arab fellow, and he was picking up starfish and throwing them back into the sea, picking it up and throwing it back to sea. So her father was quite moved by that and surprised by that and went up to the fellow and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm saving the starfish." Her father looked at him with eyes of disbelief. "I'm saving the starfish? I mean, there are thousands of starfish going up and down. What difference do you think you'll make?" And the man looked at him, and he was holding a starfish, and he said, "I'll make a difference to this one." And threw it back in. That's all you have to do, is make a difference to this one. You know, I grew up with Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Not literally. I'm much younger. But also, right? And I grew up with "Love the One You're With." I don't know what they meant by that. I'm afraid I do know what they meant by that. But that's how you save the world. It's that world that's sitting beside you right this second. It's that world that's presenting him or herself to you right now. That's the difference you can make. But that's the question you have to ask yourself. Am I making a difference? Right? Or am I just filling my pockets or filling my bank? Or are you really making a difference? That's Rosh Hashanah.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.